Good afternoon, Council. Sorry for the delay. We had a little bit of some technical difficulties here. But welcome to our January 12, 2021 afternoon session. You are our third appeal of the afternoon. Just a quick reminder to you that this is being live streamed and recorded by NETV. So to the extent you have anything confidential or sensitive, be mindful of that. There's a view of the clock on your screen. And I'd ask that you please remember to mute your computer microphone when you're not presenting. That kind of helps us with some of the echoing, in fact, that I'm hearing right now. So. All right. Well, with that, let's proceed with our third case of the day, Kinson versus Bean. Counsel for appellate.
Good morning, Judge Bishop, Judge Reedman, and Judge Welch. My name is Michael Matukowicz, and I represent Jeremy and Kelsey Hinson in this appeal. I'm just going to reserve the standard 2 minutes. Now, this case involves the claims by the Hinsons of breach of contract and, breach of fiduciary duties and negligence against real estate agent Cindy Forehead and her brokerage, Ambassador Real Estate, when they purchased a home in Omaha during 2018. Now, it's noteworthy, Ms. Forehead and Ambassador served as the seller's agent while the Hinsons, my clients, were the buyers in the transaction. At the trial court level, the trial court entered summary judgment in favor of the defendants, Ms. Forehead and Ambassador Real Estate, and against the Hinsons. That decision, however, was an error because there are material issues of fact that precluded summary judgment. Now, it's noteworthy that summary judgment, as this court has repeatedly held, is a very extreme remedy, and it should only be issued or used to deprive a litigant of a formal trial when there are clearly no issues of genuine material fact in a case. Now, the trial court and this court should view the evidence in the light most favorable to the non-moving party, here the Hinsons, and giving the Hinsons every benefit of all reasonable inferences deducible from the evidence. Well, the basis of the fiduciary duty negligence claim is statute, and in Nebraska, section 76-2417 sub 3 small a sets forth a seller's duty to prospective purchasers like the Hinsons in this case. And that statute provides that a real estate licensee acting as a limited seller's agent has a duty to disclose to potential buyers of real estate all adverse material facts actually known by the licensee. And the statute goes on to say that adverse material facts include facts pertaining to the physical condition of the property and any material defects in the property. Now, here the Hinsons purchased a home during February 2018. And after closing, a former prospective purchaser for that same property came to the Hinsons' door and knocked on the door and asked them, "Did the sellers and your agent disclose to you the problems with the foundation, the structural issues with this property?" Unfortunately, Hinson's answer was truthful that they had not been so informed. Now, the facts that were before the trial court proved that on December 6th, while both the Hinsons and this individual, Bo Starkle, the other prospective buyer, were looking at the property, Mr. Starkle requested to have a structural inspection of the property. When he did that, he had Ramjack of Omaha come and look at the property. And after that structural inspection, and let me back up 1 second, the structural inspection was coordinated through Ms. Forehead. So the agent for Mr. Starkle asked Ms. Forehead to ask the sellers whether they could have this inspection, and the sellers granted that permission. Following that inspection on December 6th of 2017, the agent for Mr. Starkle sent to Cindy Forehead an email, and in the email, there were 9 attachments, one of them clearly marked estimate. And among the, in the email text itself, it said that the agent for the prospective buyer, Mr. Starkle, said to Ms. Forehead, "Attached are the estimates and other supporting documents for the structural inspection at the property." Now, again, there are 9 attachments, one of them clearly marked estimate. And had that estimate been opened.
Excuse me, counsel, yes. It was Ms. Forehead's testimony, wasn't it, that she did not open the email? She didn't open any of the attachments, right?
That's absolutely correct. She testified amazingly that she received this email following a structural inspection with an estimate and didn't open it. And had she opened it, by the way, it would have revealed that there's a $64,000 required repairs to the foundation of the property. Now, incredibly though, Judge Reedman, you're right. Ms. Forehead claims she didn't open any of the 9 attachments, including the estimate. However, even without that, there is abundant evidence that she had knowledge, actual knowledge, of adverse material facts concerning the property. Now, in her deposition, under oath, Ms. Forehead testified that she had actual knowledge that there was an estimate attached. She testified that she knows exactly what an estimate was, and she testified that when there's an estimate, that means there's a cost involved to fix something. In fact, Ms. Forehead testified, for example, an estimate is an estimate. If you have a broken window and someone comes out to look at it, they give you a price to fix it. So she knew this estimate had a price to fix something with the property that arose from a structural inspection.
Mr. Matuzewicz.
She also confirmed that she, pardon me?
So I have a question for you.
Yes, ma'am.
762403 defines adverse material fact. And so even if we were to agree that there were material issues of fact related to her, related to Forehead's knowledge about some of the property issues. I keep hearing an echo, so sorry, that's why I'm pausing a little bit. Part of that statute also says that it had to be matters not reasonably ascertainable or known to the party. Given that there was a home inspection done by the Hinsons at their own request, wouldn't that suggest that it was reasonably foreseeable?
Not necessarily, Your Honor. Again, when a home inspection happens, it's a visual inspection of the property. They may look and see, in this case, there may have been settling or cracking, which were observed. But here, that alone did not recommend additional inspections or additional requirements to make sure we're fixed. With this case, we had an actual structural inspection by structural engineers that found $64,000 of required repairs. This inspection was above and beyond a visual inspection that normally accompanies a whole house home inspection. Now, again, even without opening this email, Ms. Forehead knew that there was an estimate and a cost associated with repairs to the foundation of the property, and she acknowledged that. Now, that's ample evidence, but even more, 2 weeks later, Ms. Bolt sent an offer on behalf of Bo Starkle to Cindy Forehead, and the offer was $169,500 less than the listing price. That offer, again, was from a buyer, a prospective buyer, Bo Starkle, who was armed with knowledge based upon a structural inspection. And now we have all these, her knowledge of the estimate with 9 attachments that she says she didn't open. We also have an offer 2 weeks later of an offer $169,000, nearly $170,000 less than asking price. And in the email that the agent sent with the low offer, Ms. Bolt stated to Cindy Forehead that prospective buyers are willing to take on the work that they feel needs to be done to the property, mainly the foundation work, replacing rotted windows and fixing damaged drywall due to water damage. So again, more evidence right before Ms. Forehead that there are adverse material facts with respect to the condition of this property.
So I just want to follow this question a little bit further. Because the statute does require that it not be reasonably ascertainable by the buyer, right? So if a buyer has a home inspection done, isn't there a suggestion then that anything's reasonably ascertainable at that point if the buyer has their own home inspection done?
Not necessarily, because I don't believe if an inspector makes an error or is negligent in conducting an inspection, or in this case, there is even another engineer that went to the property, you can't foresee the negligence of someone else. So that doesn't relieve Ms. Forehead of her obligation when she has possession of an adverse material fact, here an estimate, to take note of that and to disclose it to the buyers. I note that I'm out of time here.
Mr. Matuzewicz, before we let you go though, it's my understanding of the record that Ms. Forehead had seen a structural report from foundations to rooftops, and it indicated that there was no major problem. Is that correct?
Partially correct, Your Honor. Judge Reedman, what happened here was the sellers caused an inspection to be performed by foundation to rooftop. And then again, that is not a structural engineer. It's just a regular home inspector. And again, the Ms. Forehead seems to rely upon that. However, when you look at that report, which is part of the record, there were no fewer than 18 recommendations in that report for follow-up with either contractors, engineers, or other experts. And some of those issues specifically would have brought attention to the fact that there are structural issues. That it talked about shifting of floors, shifting of posts outside the property and in the property, slanting of walls, and settling and cracking. So frankly, she probably should have disclosed the foundation to rooftop report as well, but she didn't do that either here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Are you reserving the rest of your time?
Yes, I am.
You know what, though, I want to follow up with one. I was on mute, so you missed me. So I apologize for it, but I think I need to further inquire about something here. And I'm also following up on that adverse material fact question. So understanding that your position is, hey, she must have been on notice of this. She can't claim ignorance. To make that point, you say that there's 3, 4, 5 different people before that looked at this house, found this issue. How could you not be on notice of that? But doesn't that argument work against you when it comes to the issue of whether it's an adverse or it's a reasonably ascertainable defect? Meaning, this isn't a seller disclosure. This is a seller agent disclosure to a buyer in a very specific statute. Aren't we reserving this just for those latent type defects that you have knowledge of that you need to put the other side on notice because they're not likely to find it? How can we say that on this record?
You're still muted, Mr. Matukowicz.
Sorry about that. Judge Welch, I appreciate your question. I think in this case, again, there's going to be these minor signs that to a normal home inspector or to a normal contractor, they may not mean much. That's why it was important here that Mr. Starkel requested the structural engineering inspection, which when he observed everything in its totality, some of the marks of settling, cracking, water damage, wood rot, things like that. When he put the totality of the circumstances together, he was able to come up with the Ramjack people, this conclusive estimate of over $64,000 of required repairs to address the structural condition. So again, I don't think the visual inspection conducted by someone without an engineering pedigree was sufficient to put someone on notice of the significance of the issues. I mean, all houses crack and settle, and there's going to be some marks, cracking, and other notes of settling in a house that's a few years old. But again, and the expert here did look at it, put together a significant estimate for $64,000, and Ms. Forehead believes she can now put her head in the sand and ignore it.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, you are out of time. Mr. Ketchum?
Yes, may it please the court. I think the first thing to note here is that there are really no factual disputes in terms of what Ms. Forehead knew and the whole timeline of the reports. And it really is a legal question, basically on the issue of duty for the court. There were cross motions for summary judgment. I think both parties understood one party would be the victor based on how the decision came out on duty. And in this case, I do think we have a very good district court opinion by Judge Bowie that really gives us, knowledge of how he ruled and why, and we don't always get that. So with respect to duty,
He construed it so narrowly. It was like Forehead had to have knowledge, actual knowledge of the defect itself, as opposed to any facts, other facts that she may have known that would have significantly impacted the desirability of the property, which clearly there were facts she was aware of. There were numerous other offers in which references were made to concerns about problems with the property. So from that standpoint, weren't there some issues of fact in controversy?
No, I don't believe so. 76-2417 is the statute that recognizes for the first time really a seller's duty to a buyer. Obviously, a common law, we had caveat emptor. And if you read the law review articles in this area, there's been either judicial decisions or statutes like this one to put a very limited obligation on a seller to the other side. So caveat emptor no longer rules, but the court is very circumspect in, the legislature is very circumspect on how wide they want this duty to be. And there's another statute that controls too, and that's 76-2120, the seller's disclosure statement statute. And that puts the obligation only on the seller, not the agent. Now, case laws have essentially said agents can't commit fraud, basically, and hide a known defect. And that's actually what 76-2417 requires, that if you have actual knowledge of a condition or defect, then you have to disclose that. And so
can you just get a realtor just or seller's agent just ignore what may appear to be facts that would be adverse, as what seems to have happened here. She chose not to open the email knowing the general content of what it was about.
Right. So the fact here is that at the time she was opening or sent that email, her only obligation was to her client and Mr. Beans. And he said he was not going to entertain a non-serious lowball offer, and there was no need to send him the email or to read it. She was on vacation, didn't see a need to read an email if there's no offer or no interest in the property. And so to say that another buyer sends something and that creates a duty for a subsequent buyer, I think is going to, that's a slippery slope, and I don't know how you would ever sort those out. So did she have an obligation to read that email even? I don't think so. My inbox is full of things that I may or may not have to read.
But even without reading that email, there were quite a few other realtors who contacted her on behalf of other prospective buyers who made references to problems with, you know, foundation or other physical problems with the house. So she was aware of facts that appeared to be affecting, you know, the value of the property or the interest in the property. And to me, the question really relies more on, are these things reasonably ascertainable to a prospective buyer? So to go back to my question earlier to Mr. Matukowicz, because they had their own home inspections, the Hinsons, does that then sort of satisfy that requirement as far as Ms. Forehead's concerned, because they had their own home inspection done? Does a home inspection, in other words, does a buyer having a home inspection as a matter of law eliminate this requirement for a seller's agent?
Well, it certainly eliminates the argument that they relied solely on the agent. In this case, backing up just a little bit, based on some of the comments that were being made by people going through the house, Ms. Forehead actually did the responsible thing and asked her seller if he knew of, you know, anything, and he disclosed that he had a structural inspection done by Foundations too. And so she satisfied herself that his disclosure statements were true, and they're his representations. So to answer your second part of that, I think under 2403, it does require an adverse material fact, or define it as one that, you know, significantly affects the desirability and value of the property, not reasonably ascertainable or known to a party. So in this instance, I think when they had two inspections done, the buyers, both of which passed, it did relieve my client of liability. And that's not an unfair result, because we know the appellate sued both the seller and their own inspector.
But should the reasonably ascertainable aspect of that definition, is that something that should be decided as a matter of law? Is that a fact question for a jury to decide?
Well, I think in this case, we know that they had the inspections done and we know what the inspections said. And we know based on those inspections, the appellants were willing to go forward with the purchase. And there were a lot of repairs that were done too, during this time as a part of the sale. And so you're essentially asking a real estate agent to guarantee the work done by a structural engineer. If you find that the liability falls on the seller's agent to the buyer rather than the engineer who performed the apparently negligent inspection.
Well, that's all, of course, easily avoidable if information is just shared, right? If the seller's agent is aware that there are some other adverse facts, then that should just be shared. And to the extent of, you know, making a decision on whether to buy or not, that's up to the buyer.
Yeah, and that's where appellant's evidence falls. There's no evidence that Ms. Forehead was aware of actual adverse facts.
So there's two different aspects to this. Number one is what her knowledge was, but the second issue is whether or not it's reasonably ascertainable. Does the fact that Ramjet came in there, did their investigation, and came up with that, doesn't that demonstrate that it's reasonably ascertainable?
It's something that you can have an inspection done, and I think if Ms. Forehead was sitting there before closing and she was nervous about this, think of her state of mind. She had a report from the buyer or seller saying there were no issues, and she had two reports from the seller saying there's no issues. So with that actual knowledge known to her, to try to imply that she should have done more when the reports were 3-0 that there was no issue, that's kind of a stretch. I don't think you can infer here that Ms. Forehead, owed any obligation through Mr. Starkle to warn other people or to read his emails. The actual purpose of the statute is that these issues become known to the buyer, and here the buyer certainly had ample opportunity to explore all those issues. Unless there's any questions, I'll rely on my brief.
Are you aware of any cases? I imagine if you were, you would have put this in your brief, but you might not have anticipated us going down this line either. But are you aware of any cases where courts have, as a matter of law, determined that a home inspection requested by a home buyer precludes any liability against the seller or the seller's agent? In essence, it puts the liability on the people who inspected the home if it turns out they're given bad information.
Right. I think I'm not aware of a case, no. And I think the better rationale is to stick to the fact that under the statute and the common law, there's simply no duty. And the notion that the appellant keeps making of a fiduciary duty is owed from a principal to an agent. And the seller certainly cannot argue that we are in a fiduciary relationship. We're on the opposite side. The buyer's agent owes his client a fiduciary duty because that's a principal-agent relationship. So the only duty is the very limited duty that the legislature has recognized in these two statutes. And here there's just no evidence of actual knowledge on which appellants can recover.
All right. Any questions, Judges Reedman or Welch?
No more.
Thank you. I know we took you over your time, and I know Mr. Matukowicz, you were out of time, but if you want, 60 seconds to have a quick comeback, that's okay.
Thank you. I'd appreciate that. Your Honors, I think given the totality of the circumstances, you can't just, Mr. Ketchum talks about 3-0. There is no 3-0. There's the Foundations to Rooftop report, which has 18 recommendations for further investigation. That wasn't provided. We have the inspection granted by the sellers, an estimate provided along with 8 other attachments explaining warranties and the work to be performed to fix the foundation of the property, not provided. We have an offer, $169,500 less than asking price as evidence. We have 5 other agents making comments based upon their clients' reviews of this property. Cindy Forehead had actual knowledge. I think the Hancock case cited in our brief is instructive, which says that one has knowledge of a fact where one actually knows of the fact, or facts that would create a reasonable, prudent person to believe such condition existed. And again, when you look at the totality of the circumstances, Cindy Forehead shouldn't have been the gatekeeper of information. She should have disclosed the information and let the buyers decide based upon full disclosure. Again, a real estate purchase is the biggest purchase of a person's lifetime. So for Ms. Forehead to be the gatekeeper and to censor the information was wholly inappropriate. It violates the statute, and the trial court erred in not giving every reasonable inference to the Hensons, and summary judgment should have been denied. This case belongs back in the district court. I do thank you for your time.
You're welcome. Thank you both very much for your good arguments today and the matters submitted. Thank you.
Thank you all.